Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I'm personally excited for this episode to dive deeper into your own personal journey and talk more about Miami and, you know, the Miami tech scene and what someone can expect if they were thinking about making the move to Miami. And as a way to get started, if I'm new to Miami, like what would you recommend if I want to get in like a great cup of coffee or cafecito, as Miamians like to call it?
Well, thank you, Cesar, for having me. It's a pleasure to be on here. It's kind of fun to have the tables turn a little bit. But yeah. I will say automatically, I'm probably one of the worst people to ask where to get a cafecito. Maybe my grandma's house, but I can make one. Unfortunately, I don't drink coffee. I'm like one of the few Cubans in Miami that don't drink coffee. Aside from like being like a plant-based Cuban, my family already thinks I should be shunned, but...
Wow. So how do you, a plant-based human, I don't hear that quite often. Like, how do you manage that, you know, in your circle?
It was hard. I'm very, very, very Cuban. I was born in Cuba. My family like only speaks Spanish for the most part. Mm-hmm. Getting together, it's a lot of, you know, Cuban food. So at first it was hard. They didn't understand it, but I've been vegan for like over 5 years now. I'm mostly mm-hmm. vegetarian, but it took a while to explain what it meant. There is no word for vegan in Spanish. So that took a little while, but ultimately we figured it out. I could eat all the sides, just not the steak and the meat. So uh-huh. everything right. else I could eat. So it's great. It's a win-win still.
It reminds me of my family. I'm not vegan, but sometimes I would say, hey, I don't want to eat meat or whatever you're making, and they would give me like a death stare, like, who are you?
Yes, my plate could have been full of rice, beans, sweet plantains, yuca, like a salad. And then they'd come over and they say, you're not eating anything. I'm like, right. Oh my God.
Oh my God. That's awesome. Well, let's dive into what you're currently doing now, right? So you're based in South Florida, in Miami. And for those in the audience that might not be familiar with your work, tell us more about what you're currently doing now, what falls under your responsibilities.
Yeah, absolutely. So I live currently in Miami Beach, Florida. I'm a director of strategic partnerships for Empire Office. Empire Office, what that means, it's that we basically are a furniture dealer, a commercial furniture dealer for the commercial industry. So anything from, you know, corporate to healthcare to higher education, government, we furnish offices. My role essentially is more strategist based. I go out and I network, and I also talk about the office of the future. So I do more of that communication side, and I implement some of my design background into the knowledge of, you know, the future of work or just cultures, synergies within the office. And that's pretty much my day job. Aside from my day job, I have a couple fun projects. One of them being the Infinite Attraction podcast, which mm-hmm. I started last year. And now I'm on a season 2 of it, a very different rendition of what it was last year. And I also am a co-founder of Nova, a local communications club, similar to, you know, it's a speaking group. So we mm-hmm. are kind of just gather and work on pitches, just anything that is around communication and public speaking.
I love that. And, you know, there's many things here that I definitely want to unpack, and we'll come back to them. But the first one I wanted to dive into is, why interior design, right? What was it about interior design that got your interest and that you decided to, hey, this is going to be a great career for me?
That's a good question. A lot of people don't really ask me that, so it's interesting. But I fell in love with interior design very early on. I was in high school. I think it was even my sophomore year. They did a job fair, and all the job fairs can sometimes be boring, and the stuff mm-hmm. that they're presenting doesn't sound very exciting. I went to an F school, so it wasn't the best high school in the world. And I remember the job fair was kind of sad. And I walked into it. It was I wasn't supposed to be in there because I was only a sophomore, but I looked at one table and this woman had this computer. It was just, everyone had like papers and things, but this one woman had just like a MacBook, and on her screen was just this digital, beautiful design. And I was like, what is this? I want to do that. And one of the programs happened to be interior design. I've always contemplated with the idea of becoming an architect because I just love the technical side of architecture and the creative process that's involved with it. So when I saw interior design, though, it just hit me for a moment. Like, I want to design for people, not the structure itself. I want to design spaces where people interact and spend their daily lives. So from that moment, I graduated school and I went straight to the Art Institute and I was like, I'm going to be an interior designer. And that's ultimately why I did it. I could still do graphics. I could still do, you know, do the technical side, but there was intention there.
I love that. Especially because you found, let's say, your career, your calling by paying attention to your surroundings, right? To this woman, to this person that had in his computer design work. And you were like, huh, you know, I wonder what that would look like for me as a career, right? And that's something to be said about workers in general, right? Being open to exploring, to ideas that you might come across, inspiration, right, from your surroundings. Because sometimes we can have like a laser focus, right? Don't look at anything else. But it's important to remain open to exploring, right, what the possibilities can be if you just try things. One thing that you mentioned, the future office, right? What are some of the elements of design that we're gonna see, in the future as we dive into? We call it the future of work, but I believe that the future of work is already happening, right? So what are some of those elements that are going to be part of the office of the future?
And when I say the future of work, I agree with you 100%. It is, the future is of work is now. It's just a term coined because most people are still working in a very traditional format. So the office evolves constantly. This industry that I work in, the reason I chose to be a part of the commercial industry was because it evolves constantly. We as humans evolve. So does the place that we work. We spend most of our time working than we do sleeping. So that's 8 hours a day that we spend in an office, you know, spend around people that we interact with, the space. So a lot of the offices are still very traditional. They haven't adapted necessarily to technology. What the pandemic created was a force in one direction that was very rapid, where now we have to actually pay attention. So before, I would say you had like top leaders in tech that were really doing the future of work, let's say, we're going to call it that, they were doing it right. And when we say they're doing it right, what they were doing is that they had an environment that really was created for the people, that weren't just amenities, but it was with people in mind. And often offices don't necessarily do things for people in mind. They become very traditional in the sense that you have enclosed private offices, you have an open area that are, you know, what we call now workstations, no longer cubicles. And then you have maybe a break room. Back in the day, the amenity of a break room was like the biggest innovation in the office industry. Right. It was considered the best thing because that it was creating collaboration amongst employees. And smoking used to be the thing that joined people. It was the excuse to go outside and have a conversation and take a break from your day.
Right.
Because what we've learned is that throughout those 8 hours a day that you spend working, you're actually not effectively working. There's a lot of time that is spent doing other things that are not your actual task at hand. So what we've started to discover is that we need to care more about our employees. With the pandemic, we just noticed that hybrid was actually healthy for some people, or working full-time at home was healthy for some people because they were able to spend more time on themselves, take breaks along the day, go for walks, take care of things in your home. They had, you know, their kitchen, everything nearby, but it also was not great for everybody because some people miss the person-to-person interaction. Mm-hmm. So where we believe hybrid is the future, I'm not sure to, I can agree 100% on that. I think hybrid is very hard to define because we've been pushed on two extremities, one that we never thought we would be on, which is full-time home. And now we're experiencing the fact that we can go back out. What we're noticing is that human interaction is 100% necessary. Like, I think Microsoft announced research that they were doing on their employees that were working hybrid. And they realized that the connection, although we have so many ways in which we can connect via Zoom, mm-hmm. Teams, all of those that are available, we still aren't able to, like, that human part is so essential because it's how we create. Creativity is easier when shared. And sometimes that's through facial expressions, it's through mm-hmm. our energy that we convey. And so I believe that there's a lot of research that is accurate. And I also believe that a lot of it is still, it's in early stages. So we're just constantly, we don't know either. We're also mm-hmm. trying to follow the trends. We're trying to do research on how it's affecting people's mental health. So that when we come to these companies and that are interested in making a difference in their office, we can not just sell them furniture. We can work with their HR teams. We can tell them, hey, it's all about the adjacencies. It's all about the amount of collaboration. People still need their silo time because essentially you have private conversations, moments where they're focus based. So, it's really interesting. I love what's happening because it's forcing more people to be curious on how they can be better. And I think companies before wouldn't do that. They would just say, hey, private offices, this, you're lucky you get, a break room and a coffee machine. And they believe that coffee machines were like the next big thing.
Right.
And it's not anymore. Now there are other considerations that are beyond even the physical space.
It's so interesting. I used to be part of a organization where you had your typical gray cubicle, right? Like it was just like almost felt like isolated. And I remember the first time I walked into a co-working space, the feeling of freedom, of expression, of creativity, the different layouts, the different colors, I couldn't help but feel like inspired, right? And now that we're remote, sometimes hybrid, and hybrid can mean many different things, right? It can mean you see your coworkers once a quarter or once a year at a company retreat, right? Or you go to the office once a week. So it's a very loose term, but I've started to pay attention how my physical environment really affects my psychology, my emotional state almost. So it's so interesting. I agree with you. I don't think we're gonna see those type of like physical spaces in the sense, like too traditional, where mm-hmm. creativity is almost like not allowed, right? Because it wasn't
it's
designed.
Not welcome.
Yeah, it's not welcomed.
People don't want that either. Now, I think before you did it because you had to, right? And now employees are becoming more demanding of their needs. So their expectations have changed. So they don't want to go back to a plain, dull office. Mm-hmm. Why do that when you can work from home? Because you prove that you can. So they're expecting to go back to an environment that is trying to evoke inspiration. So I agree with you. And it's tough because I always do like a parallel of like showing an image of like your typical office and mm-hmm. and the colors sometimes can be very muted. And then you can look like at a, just to use Google, because obviously Google's and WeWorks and those sorts, they're very co-working collaborative kind of spaces. And then you look at the bright colors versus, this dull, plain office, immediately, you're going to be drawn to the color over mm-hmm. the dullness of one office. So sometimes the visual, it really just impacts the way we behave, the way we interact, the way we think, the way we innovate. So it's so important that we actually pay attention to those things.
Absolutely. Now, Elizabeth, let's shift gears. I want to take a step back into your own personal journey, right? You were born in Cuba, right, from Cuban parents. You came to the US when you were 4 and a half, and you taught yourself English, right, in the process. And you're also someone that throughout your career, you have learned how to embrace reinventing yourself and embrace being vulnerable. Tell me more about that. You know, what that process has been like. What's your inspiration to, or where do you get, where does this come from? The constant need to learn new things, reinvent yourself, and embrace vulnerability. Like, where does that come from?
Generally, I think it's the need to just be resourceful. I think as Cuban-born immigrant, you know, you come to this country with the idea that you're here for opportunity. Mm-hmm. Right off the plane, I stepped into the future. I remember that was my immediate, like, just where am I? What is this? Because the cars in Cuba were old. I'm not even 30. I turn 30 next week, and I have black and white photos of my childhood. Wow. And everybody's like, they look vintage, and it's almost like, what year was I born? So I always like to share that, because I came to this world with, like, wow, like, just that immediate, like, oh my God, this is opportunity. And when I asked my parents why they sacrificed to, you know, so much to get me here, they always say, we just wanted you to have options and we wanted you to be able to flourish. And so I've just taken that with more than a grain of salt. It's just who I am. So I've had to just kind of pivot a lot in life and continue to learn. And because I feel like it's almost like, there's so much, it's overwhelming, because yes. There's so much opportunity. You don't know which direction you want to go to.
It's true.
So in a sense, you almost want to explore all of it. And I am one of those people that I am interested in so much. I'm not just interested in, you know, one single career. As a child, you're almost pressured into becoming successful, mm-hmm. because we brought you here to be successful, and they only know what they know. So it was like the very traditional jobs. And I was always very rebellious. I was like, I was an entrepreneur as a kid. I was like hustling it from day one, but I did not want to do just your typical jobs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just started to try to take my own path. But I started to notice also in that process that I still had a lot of just integrated, you know, learnings or stigmas and things that stuck with me that I had to unlearn. Mm-hmm. And I made mistakes along the way. And that's actually great. I'm grateful for that. I'm actually reading a book right now. And to quote a line from that book, it says that failure is inevitably a byproduct of innovation. And I agree with that.
I love it.
To the 100th degree, because if I wouldn't have failed the many times that I have, I almost hate to call it failures, because I think that it's just part of the process. Mm-hmm. It's part of the journey. So I used to blame myself for like not having immediate success or not going to Ivy League college because mm-hmm. I didn't have the opportunity. Blame myself for just like a slew of things because I was trying to compare myself to other people. But then I started to realize I was doing just fine with what I had. I was trying and I was finding my way. Learning English, like there was no one around me. My parents didn't know absolutely anything. We moved, mm-hmm. we were living in San Francisco. They would literally save every penny to buy me a VHS. It was very expensive. And for them it was. And so they would buy me that movie. And I must have watched Bambi and the Little Mermaid over 100,000 times. And my parents had no idea that I was like learning from the movie. Mm-hmm. That's how I picked up English. So it's that just, if you don't have the opportunity and you don't have the obvious, like easy routes of learning, you figure it out. Mm-hmm. And so even if that means you have to constantly pivot because you go in one direction and it works or it doesn't work, but I don't give up. I think that I can say that at least I try not to give up. It gets overwhelming, but it's just a fun journey, I think, overall.
Absolutely. And I love that you're sharing this, because as we step into the future of work, the constant is going to be constantly reinventing yourself, because things are changing so fast. And having that flexibility and that agility to figure it out, how can I stay relevant? because the market is merciless, right? And we saw that with the pandemic, a lot of people were forced to pivot and found themselves in situations where they had to get creative, right? On how to continue developing new skill sets, you know, based on technological disruption. And it's important, right? It's probably one of the most important skills that you can develop for the future. It's just having that resourcefulness and that drive to constantly reinvent yourself. And I think you've done an amazing job at that. So thanks for sharing that. It's important. So with reinvention, naturally, there are times where you're gonna fail, right? Things didn't work out. Is there any failure amongst all the failures that stands out to you and that taught you the most?
Believe it or not, and I hate to call it a failure, but I went through a divorce early in life, and it taught me more than just like the personal side of going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. It taught me you can't do the thing that you think you have to do. You have to do what you want to do, and you have to really pay attention deep to yourself. And I was going down the path of like doing for my family and doing what I thought was the thing that, you know, it was part of my job now. They made their sacrifice. So there was, and it's not a failure. It was the best. I was young and I fell in love and I, you know, went through that process and I chose my career over some of the relationship too. And I didn't know how to manage. I didn't talk to anybody. I was not communicating at all. But in turn, that taught me, I was just doing steps, that the white picket fence story. I was just doing what I thought the American life was. And I didn't slow down enough to just discover myself and pace myself. I come from a family of survivors and I think I'm tired of surviving. I want to thrive. I want to stop surviving. And I think that those kind of that mentality of like, go do, you want to do, you want to be like everyone else, you know, the easy door access, you know, into life. But that's just not my case. I didn't have someone walk me through a door. So I was trying to go so fast to get there, wherever there is. And it crashed fast. And I didn't understand why. And I thought I had just failed at life. And in many aspects, I failed my family. I failed myself. I failed, you know, my career. Was that really what I was supposed to be doing? Like, it just in all aspects, I thought I had failed, but it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to me because I quickly realized that I had so much work to do, not only personally, but just, you know, on a deeper level with my family. I had to start to connect, grow up in a sense. Like I needed to communicate more. And that's essentially down the line what led me to starting my podcast was the desire to want to share my story so that people become more vulnerable. And it's okay. Being an immigrant is not easy. And sometimes you have to work harder. You don't need to pretend to be all right all the time and to have it figured out. That sense of having to have it figured out can be very intimidating on a person. And that's where I think you can in turn shut down a little bit.
Absolutely. And being from an immigrant family myself, I can relate to that pressure of, even if it's a self-imposed pressure of wanting to please your family or wanting to pay it back to your parents, you know, because of the opportunities. But that can be a slippery slope, right? That can lead you to a dead end, essentially. And that happens more frequently than not, especially for professionals like us, right? Like our parents gave us opportunities and there's this like, we feel compelled to pay it forward, right? But sometimes that's not the best path, right? Because ultimately we have to choose our own path, which is what you've done. Now tell me about the podcast. Like what was the inspiration behind it? What was the process to record that first episode, which I would recommend to anybody? It's a lesson in being vulnerable and embracing your story. So tell me, what was the process like?
Yeah, that was a very difficult thing to release for me. first of all, I have no idea what I was thinking because I had never done a podcast. I listened to podcasts, but I'd never even been on one. I just didn't know what really I was getting into, but I had the desire of sharing my story to help others. Well, I think really the goal for me was to help mm-hmm. in whatever way, because when the pandemic hit and I was alone at home, I had a lot of time to think, and I never have enough time to think because I'm always on the go.
Yeah.
And I thought I was, you know, working through things, and I realized that I wasn't. And I started to do like a coaching certification. So like to do, you know, like personal coaching, because I wanted to really dive into it. And through that process, I realized like I had a story, and I think there were lessons to learn from my own story that I hadn't even realized. So I picked up like a phone. I texted a friend that was a graphic designer, and I was like, hey, I'm a graphic designer too, but I want to connect with you. I need your help. Like, this is my vision, and I'm starting a podcast. And he's like, okay, great. And then we had a conversation. I said, I'm launching next month. And he's like, oh, what? And like, you're serious? Yeah, I'm going to figure it out. If I give myself more time, I won't do it. So I had less than a month, honestly. It was like 3 weeks to understand how a podcast works, get equipment. And I ended up getting headphones because I talked mm-hmm. to a friend. I was like, you could do it with headphones. Getting headphones, figuring out how Anchor worked, creating just a graphic. And then I sat down to like, what is this about? Mm-hmm. And at the moment, I was very just attracted to growth, self-work, you know, just the idea of diving deeper into ourselves, taking care of ourselves, like where things stem from. And I just became really obsessed with that. And I decided to call it Infinite Attraction, because I knew that I was also going to pivot, because I'm one of those people that gets like immediately bored. And I think it's just like my attention span. So I was like, Infinite Attraction can mean anything. It's the thing that you're infinitely attracted to. Mm-hmm. And that could be, yeah. And that could depend on your stage in life. So maybe mm-hmm. I would ask people what they thought it meant, just to like, kind of just, you know, focus groups of sorts, asking people what their opinion was on the name. And some people thought it was about relationships, but they knew who I was at the time. And it was very much about my effects of my past choices and my relationships. Mm-hmm. Some people thought it was about business. It was different answers. And I realized this is the name. Why is it that when we start something, and let's say we start a project and it doesn't necessarily succeed, or we're done with it, we just scrap it and we start over. Mm. I wanted to start something that continues to evolve, we do as humans. So like, I feel like that makes you feel like failure when you start over every time. Mm-hmm. I don't think I start over. I think I just evolve. I develop, I change with time. So I wanted Infinite Attraction to be that thing that I just didn't give up on, in the sense that it could be a podcast today, but tomorrow it could be something else. Today I could be talking about myself and personal health. Tomorrow I could be talking about a tech ecosystem, you know, so it could be anything. And that's why I ultimately started it. And the first episode was just me telling people just why. And the why was like, hey, I just discovered this about myself, and I went through this, and I have issues just like everybody else. And I'm just here to tell you that it's okay. And we all are not perfect, because I was the person that just wanted to be perfect. And that was ultimately the why. And it was amazing. I received some really just incredible feedback that fueled the desire to keep it going after one episode, because I was already like, oh my God, what am I doing?
I love it, Elizabeth, because we need more of that. And I was able to compare the first episode and then the most recent episodes, and I can see the evolution. Like I can see the progress of the podcast. And you're right. Most of the time, we start something, we get to a point, and then we pivot, and then we start from scratch because we think that what we have done, it's not worthy, I guess. And one of the things I've learned, one of the best things that I learned going through a UX UI bootcamp was show your progress, right? Like show what's been that journey going from, you know, A to Z. It's important, right? Because nothing's perfect. When you get started, things are gonna be not perfect, right? And there's nothing stopping you, especially with the technology where it is today. You can start anything, a podcast, a blog, start writing on LinkedIn, whatever it is, right? Just get it out of your system, like put it out there. The world needs more of that. And actually as a way to, I guess, bulletproof your future, all of these side projects can actually work better than a resume, you know, in many ways, because they'll show the manager that, oh, you're someone that tries things. You're someone that has all these other projects, you know, has creativity, has entrepreneurial spirit. And so, yeah, I'm excited for where this podcast goes. Looking at that progress that you've made, you know, it's amazing.
Thank you.
And with that, I want to pivot into Miami Tech, right? Into Miami, which is one of your, I guess, expertise, if I feel like a better word. Let's start with, what is one common misconception people have about Miami or you know, South Florida in general?
Oh, you know, there's definitely a whole bunch of them. It's Miami. Ultimately, Miami, everyone sees Miami as a place of fun, right? Like everyone here goes clubbing, everyone does drugs. Like it's just, Miami is not a place of business. It's a place of partying. Mm. And I have to disagree. I've lived here all of my life. It is hard to find focused professionals. I think that initially for me was difficult to find the energy that I was searching for, that entrepreneurial energy. It doesn't exist as much in Miami, or there's very few. But people struggling to stay because they feel like there's more opportunity elsewhere. And for the first time, I will say, like, I love what's happening in Miami, because now that energy is here. That energy around just, you know, those people that are just driven by innovation, and you could feel it around you. And we're no longer having to leave to find opportunity. We are able to stay. That is really exciting to me. And I think that's an obvious, like, hey guys, you have to be here to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, it has that stigma or that perception that Miami is a party place. But it's changing, right? And just being someone that I used to live in South Florida, I lived there for 5 years, and I can see how people can misinterpret it. But I think the mayor has done an amazing job at just embracing innovation and embracing talent and being open, right, to the possibilities. So let's say someone decides, okay, I'm gonna make the move to Miami, right? What are some of the recommendations that you would give in terms of communities or organizations or places that they can plug in into the ecosystem, you know, without feeling like they are outsiders, right?
And you said it right there, community. That's our strength, is community. You know, Miami's strength right now in this tech ecosystem is the community of supporters that exists within this ecosystem. It's incredible how welcoming it is. Everybody has that, how can I help mentality, you know, and it's not just, you know, yes, the mayor said that quote, but that is actually a great quote. And I think that is really the essence of Florida and people that live in South Florida here in Miami. Everyone's very welcoming and everybody likes, you know, to help each other and have a good time. We instill a lifestyle here. And I think that's why we're different. I don't think we're going to be the next Silicon Valley because we're unique. We're Miami. So if you want to call it Silicon Beach, I mean, by all means, but like, I still think we're really, you know, what's special here is that community and that sense of just, you know, wellness and welcoming environment. And there's a lot of people. I would be lying if I just said, hey, this is the one, you know, like place that you should go to and the one person you should follow. It's a huge community. I mean, like there's a giant Telegram that exists that's over 900 people that is run by Damien. And that alone is called Miami Tech Life. And now there's a website, which is insane. And I'll start it from Tech Week. There's, you know, there's articles with Refresh. There's a Women in Tech event that happens monthly, that with Endeavor and Maria Dersey, which I absolutely love.
Maria.
Yeah, because then you're in the room with all these incredible women and they're nice. They're like, I can't explain it. I've been at events before where people guard themselves too much and they feel like, at least in my industry, there are very few women in business development roles and they could be very tough because they have to be. In this environment, no one's like that. No, their guards are completely down and they're there to help you. They're there to connect. They'll come up to you. I mean, you could be the shyest person in the room and you're not going to feel that way. So that's definitely one way. Also, Chris Adamo hosts a biweekly happy hour that I recommend at the Freehold. It's also incredible. You know, you can find some of these events on the googlesheet.com. It's that event, him alone, you get to meet him. I mean, you guys should listen to the podcast. He's awesome. He is such a great testament to, you know, why Miami, why he chose to be here. And he's been here for 10 years now. Wow. He's family. He's raising his child here. So, you know, it's just, he said, Miami made me who I am. And that stuck to me because I realized, yeah, he goes, I was boring before and now I have these cool shirts. And that was just like, wow, I love that. And I agree. And there's people that you meet, that are just constantly there to help. Like I'll receive a message on LinkedIn or on Twitter, because I have a, you know, like Twitter has been lately the thing to use. And someone will say, hey, like they'll slide into the DMs and they'll ask like, right. Hey, can we connect? And I may not respond immediately, but I always respond. I'm like, let's set up a 15-minute call because they have questions. And I'm like, let's just connect. I'll share my quick insights. I'll try to guide you in the right direction, connect you with the right people. And I'm not the only one doing that. There's so many other people that are doing that. And they do it like those 15 minutes are, you know, out of my regular day.
Right.
And people do it because they want to, because we don't just want anybody here. We want the right people here, but we want you to understand what our culture is like, you know, how we are diverse, how to become more diverse, how to respect, you know, the community, the people around you. If you're going to be here and you're going to ask for help, you're going to also give it in return. So it goes both ways. We want to, you know, be a community where we support each other. And that goes both ways.
We'll make sure to link each of those in the episode. I can't even talk not today. episode notes to make sure that folks can get a quick link to those resources. But yeah, that's probably one of the best things you can do, whether in Miami or anywhere else you go. Plug into the existing meetups, the existing communities, because right, like the people that are already in the ecosystem will help you out, like people like yourself, like Maria.
Yeah, don't be afraid of asking for help, like, or ask a question. You know, I think that's typically the way it is on like on LinkedIn. People are like thinking of the perfect sentence or phrase to ask or to email or to send in a message. Don't overthink it. Just be you and just don't be afraid. Mm-hmm. And if the person doesn't respond, then maybe that's not the community you want to be around, you know, or that's not the person that you can connect to. And sometimes they are busy. So find those, you know, message a couple people and you'll get a response. Reach out. There's a lot of supporters.
Yeah, just reach out. And I agree with you. You know, people get busy if they don't respond to you right away. Follow up, right? I'm a big believer in intention. As long as the intention is pure, you know, things happen. And I think one of the best things the mayor could have come up with is, how can I help? Mm-hmm. Because that immediately brings down any barrier, like any awkwardness. Like, how can I help? How can I be of service? And Miami is embracing that, right? As far as the culture. Do you think that we're going to see more cities embrace this style of leadership, or is this just unique to, you know, Mayor Francis, Mayor Suarez? What's your take on that?
I think you need to be open-minded. I think that's definitely something he did, and embrace. You need to embrace change and you need to embrace the new times. And technology is absolutely the future. It makes up a lot of the jobs today in the US and across the world, honestly. And I think to take a different approach, you know, from the way we've been doing things for so many years is necessary. Mm-hmm. I think to push community, and not necessarily business, but also community, and promoting that you want the rest. It doesn't just come from him. There's a team of people that work, you know, in an office within Venture Miami. Mm-hmm. And then aside from that, then you have all the local people. I think you need to also speak to your existing community before mm-hmm. you ask for, you know, before you invite people to your community, you need to speak to your community. I think that's something he's done, and he supported the local community. If there's any, we first and foremost try to support local business. Mm-hmm. If there, obviously we want companies to move here, but we also need to make sure that the existing infrastructure, the ecosystem that is already here, those who have been working tirelessly for years, trying to grow an ecosystem in Miami, are also at the front lines, are also being supported. And he's done that. He said, hey, these are the people that are here. And we talk about not saying, okay, OGs, new Gs and all that, because yes, there's a lot of OGs in the community, but there is also a lot of people that feel like they are also an OG of the community, maybe mm-hmm. haven't been working. I myself haven't been in tech all of my life. I've discovered tech through time in my own ways. Mm-hmm. And now this has been the community where I feel like I belong. It's the right community for me. So you need to also embrace that. Embrace the existing community that you have and welcome it. I do think that, you know, that it's a testament to scaling fast, creating something from zero to nothing, you know, right. And look what it's done for Miami. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, real estate is incredible right now. It's and some may say negatively only because the locals, it's been impacted by it.
Of course.
But I think it's creating opportunity. There are mm-hmm. more jobs here, major mm-hmm. Announcements, you know, SoftBank, Reef is out of here in Miami. Mm-hmm. And then you've got amazing startups, and you've got, for example, here we have House of Wise. It's a women focused CBD brand, and she moved from New York. And then you've got the Seaworthy Collective, which is a venture studio working on driving regenerative ocean and climate impact and economic impact. So they're working on really excited projects. AX Labs, that's another one. They're working mm-hmm. on some VR stuff. Bundle IQ, Quokka. I mean, I can list. I hate that I don't have the time to do it, because there's so many great projects and so many local innovators that. Some of them are new, and some of them have been around forever. And you need to embrace that community, the people that are innovating in your community, because those innovations also need to help on a local level. So I think supporting locally, that's why I started with that, is so essential, because look at, we're impacted with the, you know, sea level rises. Mm-hmm. So everyone knows Florida is going to be underwater. We all know that. So what are you doing? What are you doing to bring money to our city so that we can actually change things? Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we hope that with Miami Coin, the money coming from Miami Coin, that's some of the investment that starts to happen. We need more affordable housing. So we believe that that's where it's going to be headed, but it's very early to determine, but we wouldn't have had that opportunity otherwise.
Exactly. And one thing I wanted to ask you, because I get this all the time, even myself, I've experienced this, and even you mentioned it, for someone that's not in tech, right, they might feel intimidated plugging into the Miami community, because, you know, I'm not in tech, so people are gonna look down on me, or whatever goes in your head, right? What would you advise to these folks? Like, they're not in tech, but they really want to get involved, and they have this limiting belief in their head that just because they're not in tech, you know, they're not worthy of being part of the community. What would you advise?
And I hear this one all the time too. I myself experienced this, but I think the state of mind that you need to have is that we're all students. We're all in the state of education and learning and curiosity. And you need to enter a room with that intention, the intention that you're here to learn. And you may not know everything, but that's okay. And you need to welcome, you know, that energy, because that energy will be welcomed in turn. You know, like, the people around you are going to feel that. Everybody loves to teach. Everybody loves to give back by, you know, offering what they know, because by offering what they know, it strengthens, you know, what they do know, right? Mm-hmm. So remember, people will accept that. It's okay to not know, but to be curious. So lead with curiosity. Absolutely. Leading with curiosity is going to take you there. I walked into the room with all these tech people. I knew nothing about specifically the things in tech. I knew enough. Now I know enough to be dangerous, but I still tell people I know nothing but everything because I'm curious. I step into a room, and if I don't know, I tell them, hey, this is what I know. Like, tell me what you do. I want to learn more. I've been interested in tech, and what I know about tech is a little limited because of the community that I've been involved in doesn't know about tech. My family doesn't know anything about tech. A Cuban, that's the furthest thing. Like, they just got Wi-Fi in Cuba not that long ago, a couple years ago. So, I mean, it's okay. And it's okay to not know everything. So I think when you walk into that room where you're like, oh my God, these are all tech, you know, nerds, let's say that, you know, like, and I don't know a single thing. It's okay. Like, ask the questions that you don't know, and don't feel bad if you look like a fool. I mean, where were they before they knew about tech?
Yeah.
In the same space as you.
100%. So being open to learning, ask questions, and lead with your curiosity. Best advice. Awesome. So to bring it home, I always like to ask my guests, for any book recommendations, you know, something that you're currently reading that you would recommend, or past books that you have given to someone as a gift because you love the book so much. What can you share with us?
Well, my favorite book that I think I like tell everybody about is called Love and Connection. It's by Young Pueblo. Anything Young Pueblo, like, read it all of it. Follow him on Instagram. because life isn't just what we do with our careers. It's how we lead on a personal level. And our connections are the most important aspect of where we're going, both professionally and personally. Connections are everything. So that's definitely my favorite book. So I recommend it. Right now, because I'm, you know, very specifically focused on, you know, tech, and I'm trying to learn and grow, I'm reading also, it's called The Write It. That's the one we're actually quoted from. It's by Alberto Savoia. That's a really great book. There's Zero to One as well. And then another book that I'm reading on connections, because I think the power of pitching and speaking to people is all through the, you know, having that communication skill. There's a book called The Dance of Connection. And actually, I just started reading it, but it's awesome. So it helps you, you know, how to talk to someone when you're hurt, you're mad, or scared. Because sometimes you're going to fail, and you maybe not like what the person says in return. So it's being prepared for a response and reaction. So I feel like we need to be more proactive in that. So that's a really good one. So I think it's Harriet Lerner, and I'll send them to you.
Thanks so much, Elizabeth. Yeah, I am a big reader, and it's so refreshing that you mentioned books around connection, because sometimes guests just share, you know, business books, but being someone that values connection and relationships, I always gravitate towards those books, because to me, that's the most important part of this, right? Whether professional or personal, the relationships that you get to build with people, right? And it's an art and a science. So the more you read about it, right, the more you can expand on that and how to leverage that. But yeah, we'll make sure to include those in the show notes as well. Awesome. This has been an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing more about your journey, your courage to reinvent yourself, being vulnerable, and also how someone that's new to Miami, how can they get plugged in into the ecosystem and not feel like an outsider. Thanks so much for sharing all of that knowledge with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Cesar. It's been awesome being on the show.